This is an iHeart podcast.
John Kerry farted on television. We'll talk about that tonight. We'll talk about what they're doing over there at this climate conference. A little debate preview for tomorrow. Local elections matter. All that's coming up on I'm Right. The elites are meeting right now. Did you know that? They're meeting over there in Dubai, a place built by oil with oil money. Anyway, and this big event's called COP28. We're going to bring Mark Morano on tomorrow to talk more about it. He's actually there at COP28, so that'll be interesting. But before we get to John Kerry and what they're doing over there and why they're doing it, do you know that 50% of children born used to die right here in America? Did you know that? Back in the 16, 1700s, you know, the founding of the nation, all that, that it was just the norm, half your kids would die. It's half the reason families would have so many children. You'd have 6, 7, 8, 9 children. You knew half of your children would die. It's crazy, right? Why would I bring that up? What's this have to do with climate? Do you know one of the main reasons that doesn't happen anymore? A child death is thankfully very rare now. Do you know one of the reasons? Energy. Do you know that cheap, abundant energy is not one of the things, it is the thing that pulled the world out of the darkness and into this modern era? We don't think about it as much. And why would we, right? But I want you to stop for a moment. I want you to stop for a moment and look around you right now, wherever you are, whether you're sitting there watching on your iPad at an airport, whether you're watching at home on your TV, however you're watching I'm Right tonight. I want you to just try to take your eyes off me, as hard as that may be, for a moment, and look around the room right now. Look where you're at. Every single thing in your room, with the exception of your family, was brought to you by cheap, abundant energy. It's the reason we, the normal person, a normal person, you, if you're in a one-bedroom apartment right now, you live a life that is actually superior to kings of old. All the spices you could ever want sitting there in your little spice cupboard. Lights that come on with just a flip. Oh, I'm a little hot. I think I'll make it cooler in here. Let me walk up to the thermostat and just turn it down a little. Ooh, is it cold? Let me turn up the heat. We don't properly think about this. We don't think about it often enough. Cheap, abundant energy is what built the planet you know. Now that you're thinking about that, here was John Kerry at COP28.
We're going to be transitioning out of coal. There shouldn't be any more coal-fired power plants permitted anywhere in the world. That's how you can do something for health.
Couple things on that. That's well north of 20% of the energy you use, coal-fired plants. That's one. Two, shouldn't be permitted? Excuse me? Shouldn't be permitted? The way these people see themselves, they really do see themselves as kings and queens. Who the hell is John Kerry to permit me to do anything? Or you? Who is John Kerry? Shouldn't be permitted. But let's go back to what we were just talking about there. This will be painted by most people on the right as, oh, look at this kook again. Look at this nutball. Oh, this would be too expensive. Oh, this wouldn't even work very well. When how it should be presented is, that's John Kerry calling for genocide. You understand that that's what the man-made climate change movement is, right? You understand that it's not only a genocidal movement, it is, by orders of magnitude, the most genocidal movement in the history of mankind. Ah, Jesse, that's crazy. What about Hitler? What about Mao? These people on camera announce their intention to reduce the Earth's population by billions, with a B. That is so much more murderous than Hitler, Mao, Stalin, Genghis Khan, all of them rolled up into one. By orders of magnitude, this is the most evil genocidal movement in the history of the world. The movement has decided that you are poisonous and bad for the planet. And what's best for the planet is if you would die. The entire movement is based on that. The air you're breathing out, that carbon, they think that's poison. You having access to all that cheap, abundant energy, they believe it's holding the planet back. And so they're going to try to present it to you as being, of course, for the greater good, that you just allow these people to kill billions. Here's John Kerry setting it up.
The scientists are saying this moment is alarming. It's without precedent. It is terrifying, some have said. And others will say we are in uncharted territory.
Uncharted territory. Now this is the moment where I'm supposed to point out to you all the climate predictions that have turned out to be wrong. I mean, after all, John Kerry's made many of these predictions himself.
I wish he were really up to state of the art with respect to the science on global climate change. You have sea ice, which is melting at a rate that the Arctic Ocean now increasingly is exposed. In 5 years, scientists predict we will have the first ice-free Arctic summer.
Ice-free in the Arctic. Yeah, it didn't work out that way. Anyway, let's not do that, though. Well, why do we do that? It's not what it's about. Their predictions are not about coming true. It's not that they actually predict these things, not John Kerry, not the scientists. It's not that. All of these predictions are simply trying to scare you and justify their genocide. When Hillary Clinton gets up and talks about all these increased climate deaths, she has a purpose for this. Her purpose is to justify the coming death camps for you.
We're seeing and beginning to pay attention and to count and record the deaths that are related to climate, and by far the biggest killer is extreme heat. We don't have that kind of number yet from Africa, Asia, Latin America, but we know and estimate that we probably could measure about 500,000 deaths. And the majority of those are women and girls, and particularly pregnant women.
Notice how she had to throw that in at the end. She could tell, you could see it, 500 deaths. And then she was thinking, wait, that's not scary enough. Mostly women and children and pregnant women. But she knows what she's doing. What's she doing? She's making plans. You justify the coming genocide against your political enemies by saying it's for the greater good. This is what every tyrant in history has ever done. Now, what does John Kerry get out of this? What does Hillary Clinton get out of this? Because let's be clear, remember, always remember this. There are two different kinds of communists. Two different divisions, if you will. Elite communist scum, street communist scum. There are differences between them. They work together, right? The elite communist scum, they need the street communist scum to rape and murder and loot and vandalize and tear society apart. The elite communist scum will then provide them legal protections. You see that with the FBI and judges all over the place now. So they work hand in hand, but there is a huge difference between them. The difference is the street communist scum, they actually believe. Like this guy, this protester, you can hate him, and yeah, he's an evil piece of trash. He actually believes.
Wake up! The spring is polluted. The spring is tainted. The spring is poisoned. This is a climate emergency. This is a climate crisis. There will be no opera on a dead planet.
No art. There is no anything on a planet that is dying. We must end fossil fuels.
We are in a climate crisis.
Now, those people believe. The elite communist scum do not believe. John Kerry, look, we point it out all the time, but it's really lame pointing out hypocrisy. John Kerry flew his private jet over there and he's worried about climate change. John Kerry doesn't ever think about climate change. Never crosses his mind. He doesn't believe in it at all. What is it to John Kerry then? John Kerry understands that this means money, power. Notice how they're always announcing, Biden administration just announced another one, all these billions going here for climate change and more billions going there. Well, where's all that money going? It's going to all their friends and business partners. They're all putting it in one big pot of money. This is all money they blood suck off of you and me, the taxpayer. And in the end, the John Kerrys of the world, the Joe Bidens of the world, the Bill Gateses of the world, they get richer and they get more powerful. It's about money and power for them. But they continue to stoke the flames and make these horrific predictions. Oh my gosh, no more Arctic ice in 2 minutes. What does that do? That motivates the street communist scum to vandalize, rape, murder, cause chaos. In the end, you're here in the middle. I'm here in the middle, sandwiched between the elite communist scum and the street communist scum. The elites get the power. What do the streets get? Well, sadly, in the end, they just get shot in the face. They think they're fighting for a good cause, but they'll actually be the first ones taken out and shot, as the Soviet Union did many, many, many times before, as Mao did. They take their most loyal foot soldiers, and they take them out, and they shoot them, and they throw them in a ditch because, what did they say? They know too much. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Something else that may very well make you uncomfortable, the IRS makes me uncomfortable. They're professionals. Professionals at stealing our money. Are you behind in your taxes? Did you miss some? Did you miss a year? Two? You miss 10 years? You know that the IRS, they're going to come for you, right? They didn't hire 87,000 new IRS agents to sit and sharpen their pencils. They hired them so they can come for normal people. So get a professional to fight back. Tax Network USA, this is what they do. They take on the IRS on behalf of normal people. They will get you out of a jam. Don't fight it by yourself. Fight with the pros, all right? And when you go to taxnetworkusa.com/Jesse, get you a discount as well. So go and go now. We'll be back. What's their goal? The American communist. What is their goal? We've talked about it many, many, many times. What is, in the end, their overarching goal? You see it everywhere. I know you do. You see it when the FBI sends their SWAT teams after pro-lifers. You see it when they try to have you fired for not taking a poisonous shot. You see it everywhere. What do you see? The goal is to turn you into an enemy of the state. Not make you a political opponent. Not make you someone they disagree with. They want you to be an official law-breaking enemy of the state. And they focus everything on doing that. But why? What do they get out of that? What do they get out of making you, me, an enemy of the state? Well, they get to turn the state's guns on you. That's the real benefit for them. They want to turn the guns of the state, the law, the FBI, the military, on you. Oh, Jesse, that's crazy. That could never happen. Please stop saying things like that to me. Stop saying things like that to me. That can't happen here. Open a freaking history book. It happens everywhere these kind of people take over. It should be something you assume is going to happen. The crazy thing right now would be if it did not happen. Not according to me, according to the history books. That is what they want. They want to turn you into an enemy of the state so they can send the FBI to murder you and kick in your door. They want to turn you into an enemy of the state so they can then send the United States military against their domestic enemies. Ah, Jesse, they would never do that. Why do you think they pushed the vaccine so hard on the United States military? Why do you think they did that? Who would refuse such a thing? Their political enemies. What happened to their political enemies in the military when they refused such a thing? They were removed. They were kicked out of the military. No longer have that uniform, that gun, that authority. They're being replaced. Replaced by who, actually? Let's talk about that. By who? Who's doing the replacing? Who's filling up the ranks of the FBI? Who's filling up the ranks of the military? Well, let's be clear about this. They're not choosy. What they need is an FBI, a military, full of people who will follow orders to attack you. There is a huge thing the right misses about the military and things like that. They're destroying the military. They're not destroying the military. They're building a military. Building a military. Why are they building a military? For what purpose, Jesse? To take on the enemies of the state. You don't believe me? Here's the great senator, piece of trash, from Illinois, Dick Durbin.
What troubles me about the debate now about the southern border is it is one half of the immigration equation. Presiding officer, my colleague from the state of Illinois, has legislation which addresses one aspect of that. Her bill, and I hope I describe it accurately, says that if you're an undocumented person in this country and you can pass the physical and the required test, background test, the like, you can serve in our military, and if you do it honorably, we will make you citizens of the United States.
That platoon full of Marines, you think they might refuse that order to fire on you, right? But what if you replace that platoon full of American-born Marines with a bunch of illegals who are going to be given citizenship as long as they honor their oath, as long as they follow orders? You think they'll fire on you and your family? I've got news for you. Again, open up a history book. They will. Why do you think they're doing it? They ran out the Patriots, and now it's time to bring in the illegals. Why do you think the FBI was recently caught recruiting at Pride events? These Pride events are despicable, demonic, really, really gross. I mean, they're just the most disgusting, perverted things you've ever seen in your life. Why would the Federal Bureau of Investigation look at an event like that and say to themselves, there's some good recruits for us in there? Why do you think they would do that? Well, do I need to remind you that the FBI, they've already been knocking on the doors of priests and choir directors? We already have the memo from the Richmond field office with the FBI announcing their intention to infiltrate your church. That was one memo that we have courtesy of a whistleblower from one field office. What does that mean? That means they're already in your church or coming for your church. They are. Don't be naive. Now, what kind of an FBI agent would be motivated to attack somebody's faith, to attack somebody's church? The kind you just recruited at a Pride event. They're not destroying the military. They're not destroying the FBI. They're not destroying the CIA, NSA, any of those things. Not in their minds. They're building one. Building one. The Pentagon has a diversity director. Did you know that? Building one. Building one that will unquestionably follow orders. What orders are those? Well, the orders they're going to give them to crush the enemies of the state. Now, that may make you uncomfortable, but listen to Christopher Wray and tell me if this is a man building an FBI.
But I can tell you that we don't investigate people for their exercise of their constitutionally protected religious expression. That particular intelligence product is something that as soon as I saw it, I was aghast. I had it withdrawn.
Really, you were aghast?
I was.
Oh, really?
Yes,
and what
sir.
Have you done about it? Did you fire the people who wrote it?
No, I had it withdrawn.
Have you fired anybody involved in it?
Senator, if you will give me a chance to answer
your question.
That's
a yes or a no. It's not hard. Have you fired anyone involved in the writing of that outrageous memo, about which, frankly, you've repeatedly misled the public? Yes or no?
The individuals involved
have
in that product...
Have you fired anyone?
Just a minute. Were not found to have engaged in any intentional or bad faith conduct.
Of course he didn't fire a person. You can't fire somebody who's doing exactly what you pay them to do. Just remember that, all right? All right. We're moving on. We have more to discuss. Wonderful things to discuss, though. Before we get to those, let's discuss something bad. Isn't it sad when our dogs die? I hate it. Freaking worst. I've buried many a dog, and I would like to push that day off as far away as possible for our current dog, Fred. That's why we take Fred for walks. That's why we give Fred rough greens with every single meal. Fred used to have ear infections all the time. He used to have digestive problems all the time. He doesn't ever have either of those things. Why? We started pouring rough greens on his food. Now he gets an all-natural nutritional supplement that actually has vitamins, minerals, probiotics, omega oils. There's none of that in your dog's food. Dog food is brown because it's dead. There's no nutrition in it. Pour rough greens on your dog's food and he will live longer. How incredible is that? Free bags, free Jumpstart trial bags. Call them, 833-33-MY-DOG, or go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
You know what the recruiting numbers are at the Army and the Navy and the Air Force? They can't reach their quotas each month. They can't find enough people to join our military forces. And there are those who are undocumented who want the chance to serve and risk their lives for this country. Should we give them the chance? I think we should.
Yes, yes. I'm sure that platoon full of illegals, they're going to refuse to fire on you and your family because of the oath they just took to the Constitution that they wiped their butt with as soon as they crossed the border. Joining me now, my friend Ryan Gerdusky of the great 1776 Project PAC, the one that's winning school board races. Ryan, you heard that loser Dick Durbin, and you took a shot at him about the French Foreign Legion. I loved it. I cracked up. But sadly, it probably went over everybody's head. What are you talking about, the French Foreign Legion? I thought they were super successful, Ryan.
Yeah, the French Foreign Legion was the French, because when they had an empire, used to hire Africans to patrol Africa, and it didn't always turn out great because oftentimes the Africans would then just turn on their French generals in the line of combat and instead of shooting on their brothers in Algeria and in other parts of Africa. It didn't ever work out too well, and neither did the Roman Empire when their entire military was controlled by foreigners towards the end of the empire. And time and time and time again, the countries that have sat there and exported their military defense to those who are not citizens fail miserably. Maybe the question should be, do we need, in the United States in 2023, do we need a million person standing army? Do we need to be patrolling the entire globe? Do we need entangling alliances? Do we need troops in parts of this world that no one knows why they're there or why they're there for decades on end? Do we need troops in both Italy and Germany as if World War II is going to start over again? These are questions worth asking. And does anyone else in the world ever have to pay for the contributions of the United States military, which is costing us upwards of $1 trillion a year in military spending? Maybe those are the questions we should be answering rather than saying there's just no more young, mostly white guys from the Midwest putting the meat grinder anymore. This is a problem.
It is a problem, Ryan. And actually, let's talk about this problem. How did this happen? Because most people educated in America's government school system do not understand that this country was founded on staying out of other people's business. George Washington's famous farewell address talked about it. Up until World War I, every American, like 98% of the country, just assumed we don't get involved in other people's business. Now, we're everywhere. That's 100 years ago, Ryan. What changed in 100 years?
Well, in the aftermath of World War II, we had the Cold War, obviously. And then after the Cold War, there was a restructuring over the obligations of the American nation. It was George H.W. Bush's new global order that we would promote liberalism all over the world. George W. Bush's son said that we would make the world free for democracy. That was the war we were fighting for, which is an impossible war, an impossible fight, and something you cannot possibly ever win. And this ongoing military expenditure to sit there and reorganize the entire globe has been an utter failure for 30 years. If anything, we've seen fewer democracies functioning across the entire world. world. We've had a rise of authoritarian leaders, even in places like Turkey, where we had somewhat of a democracy beforehand. And basically uniparty states like in India, and somewhat in Pakistan. This is the way the world's been moving, and we kind of don't have an ability to sit there and change it. And I think that a lot of people sit there and wonder, what were the last 30 years in Afghanistan and Iraq for? Why should I risk my life and limb and mental health status for a country that, one, doesn't respect veterans all that much, and two, for a country that for a lot of people feels like they are under assault domestically?
Yeah, feels like they're under assault domestically because they friggin' are. Speaking of which, here's Alejandro Mayorkas announcing his intention to get about 30 million people the right to vote in this country.
The answer is quite clear and quite straightforward, and we've been waiting for it for about 30 years, and that is to fix a system that everyone agrees is fundamentally broken, and we need congressional action, both for the lawful pathways that really need to be more robust in statute, and for the 12 million people who are here in the United States who have been contributing so fundamentally to our country's well-being.
I really hate how he talks, but that's another matter entirely. Ryan, I was thinking about this after that nutball was stabbing a bunch of people in Ireland, and then they cracked down on the people who got mad about it. I was thinking how wild it is that not just America, all the Western governments just decided to flood their countries with third world hordes and then crack down on their own people for caring about it. And this was universal practically across the West. It's amazing how this thing happened.
And it's amazing to see the countries that it didn't happen in. The Western countries that oppose it, like Denmark. Denmark, you know, Bernie Sanders' favorite country, has super secure borders. They crack down on welfare. They break up minority ghettos all the time in Denmark. And they have no qualms about it because the idea of their nationalism, their idea of their identity, is not something up for debate, really, in that country. But look, here's the thing about immigration that no one seems to understand. They keep asking for this congressional action. 95% of all of our problems with immigration reside exclusively on the executive branch. The executive branch has almost every law that you possibly would need to fix the immigration problem at the snap of a finger. The executive branch can declare Mexico a third safe country, which would end all migration from other countries who shop for a country to declare asylum in. The executive branch can solely withhold anyone that they want, any person they're choosing, any person they deem not to the benefit of the United States from entering this country. If that meant all redheads, if that meant all Asians, if that meant all Europeans, if that meant
Italians,
anybody without a college degree, anybody, they can deem it. It's the executive branch that is failing. There are some things Congress can do, but most of the things that we need to get done in immigration are solely in the hands of the presidency. It has always been that way. The president really doesn't need Congress for much when it comes to immigration. It is Joe Biden's failing on this policy solely.
Okay, so if you get a president like the one we have now that wants to flood the country with illegals to water down and destroy this place, you're pretty much screwed? Do I have that right?
Yes, you are 100%. The president could instantly declare remain in Mexico. The president can use the military to build the border wall. The Mexico. The president can sit there and attack, people who are or bring asylum seekers, not NGOs, but human smugglers. Could instantly declare them to be domestic terrorists or international terrorists. There's tons of things the president could do without the use of Congress, and they choose to do nothing because this is by design.
Yeah. Okay, you know what? There's enough ugly out there. Let's talk about something wonderful, Ryan. Everyone's looking, the people who are looking at 2024 with clear eyes understand what's coming and how ugly it's going to be, but they don't focus on school boards. They focus on one big race and, it's going to be lost, but we're going to win a bunch of school board races in 2024 if we focus, aren't we, Ryan?
Yes, March starts off the kickoff in Missouri. March starts off, school boards start in Missouri in March. By May, they reach Texas, which is your home state, and in August, they're in Florida. There are 20,000 school boards up for elections next year. Most, not most, but half of them are not during the presidential election. So half of them are throughout the entire year. The other half are during the presidential election. And many of them are nonpartisans. There's very easily ways a conservative can sit there and get elected in a more liberal-leaning area or a swing area if they campaign on the right things, if they speak to the right people, and if they campaign and work hard. I think that's totally possible. I think that we could really reform public education in a real way.
Yeah, I just wish there was an organization out there who could help people do these things. Is there an organization like that, Ryan?
Why, yes, there is. I founded the 1776 Project PAC. We are doing a major relaunch in the new year. We're doing a major expansion in the new year to work on reforming state laws, which I'll announce on your show when it comes up. And we are really pushing going. We won over 100 school board elections this year, which doesn't seem like much, but it's probably about 250,000 kids who live now in conservative school board districts. And we are just getting started. There's a lot more effort to do. And, the PAC support from average people in this PAC, or everyday people, means the world. And it's what keeps us going. And it's what funds. I think we spent over $1 million this year now on school board elections. And like I said, we're just getting started.
1776 Project PAC. I stand behind this organization 100%. 100 school board races. Do you have any idea how many children's lives now and in the future that changed? Go support them. Ryan, my brother, I appreciate you. Come back anytime. Always love that. All right. Now, there's a debate coming up tomorrow night. One of these Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, Vivek, and Chris Christie debates. Does it matter? What does matter? We're going to start voting soon? Let's talk to Sean Spicer about these things in just a moment. Before we get to that, let's do this. You know you're not stuck in your timeshare. They've lied to you. These timeshare companies do this all the time. Don't feel like you're some kind of exclusive case. You're just the one who got suckered. They do this to everyone. That's what they do. You go in, you buy it. You think, hey, when I'm done with it, I can be done with it. And then they let you know, sorry, it's yours forever. Pay your annual fees, pay your special assessments. And so people walk away, shoulders slumped. Oh, dang it, I have it forever. You don't have it forever. Lone Star Transfer is there to get you out. 99% of the time, they're successful getting people legally and permanently out. Give them a call, all right? 844-310-2646. You're one phone call away from being free of your timeshare. Call. We'll be back. All right, there's a debate tomorrow night. Another one of these Republican primary debates. No Trump, of course, but you got Chris Christie and Vivek and Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis. I wonder what Sean thinks of all this. He always has the best analysis on this stuff. Joining me now, Sean Spicer, the great Sean Spicer Show, which is now at 7 p.m. New time, 7 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, right here on the First. Sean, okay, one, obviously no Trump, so the big boy's not in the room. But I don't think these debates are useless. The viewership is up on these things. 5 million people watch DeSantis take on Newsom, so that's something. What do we get out of these things?
I'm entertainment to some degree. I mean, to your point, Trump's not here. They're all significantly far behind in the polls, both in terms of the national ones, but most importantly in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. I think this is going to, there's a good chance this could be the last one that we see for a while, at least the sanctioned ones. So, as far as what you get, I think you get some entertainment, but it's not changing the field. No one's moving up or down based on it. I'm here in Tuscaloosa. I think it's an interesting dynamic. I'm glad that they're doing it. I feel like it makes sense to go through the process to preserve this. And I'll tell you why, Jesse, just real quick. I worked really hard in 2016 for the first time ever in the history of either party to wrestle away from the left-wing media the ability to control the primary debates. And if this goes back to allowing the media to dictate when our candidates debate, and trust me, they're going to come back to no conservative moderators, 25 debates, which is what it was in 2012. That's not good for our candidates. So I think maintaining and preserving the process does serve a long-term value that needs to be maintained, because when I got over to the RNC, literally these guys, one night we debated on a Saturday and then we had another debate on a Sunday. The two most valuable things in any campaign are time and money, and debates are sucks of both.
Yeah, no, they really are. Chris Christie's out there. Obviously, he's only in the race to attack Trump. He's only been in the race to attack Trump, but here he was saying this.
How about this? He's going to go on trial the day before Super Tuesday. I believe he's going to be convicted in that January 6th trial in Washington, D.C. He's going to be convicted. Imagine this. If he's our nominee, he won't be able to vote for himself.
But he can be president.
Yes.
Okay, people can hate Chris Christie and hate that all they want. I don't care for the man one iota myself. He's not necessarily wrong about that, Sean. Donald Trump, if we are correct, or if the polls are correct, he is the nominee. He's going to be a convicted felon by the time Election Day rolls around. There's no other way around it, unjust as it may be. Where does that put us?
Well, I think you heard Neil Cavuto say it in the clip. The American people, in particular, primary voters, decided that with all the information that they have, and they know about this. I mean, he's been indicted four times. It's not like you literally have to be on lock not to know that. And they still have accepted Donald Trump as the person they want to be the nominee. Furthermore, when asked in the battleground states and the national polls, when it comes to a general election, they're choosing him over Joe Biden. So at the end of the day, the process is such that people are deciding with the baggage, with all the things they know, Donald Trump is still the one that they want in the party. And then as a president to lead this country forward, the people have spoken. And I think people can, you know, Chris Christie can get upset all he wants, but Neil Cavuto's point is still the same. He can serve as president. I don't agree. I think that the process might be such that some of these will have gotten into potentially a conviction, but I guarantee you he's going to be appealing all of them. And so, look, the process will work itself out, but so will the will of the American people. And right now, the will of the American people, both in the primary process and the general, is such that they want Donald Trump to be the next president.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see in Iowa if he is that far ahead, Sean. If the polls are to be believed, and he is really that far ahead, and Iowa comes down, and Donald Trump boat races everyone else in the race. Do you think that clears the field? I know the Jamie Dimons of the world have lined up behind Nikki Haley. I know Ron DeSantis has a very serious presidential campaign going. Do they all wake up if that happens in Iowa and say, hey, I'm done, it's not worth it?
You know, you're asking the right question, because here's what this all comes down to, Iowa. You know, in real estate, they say location, location, location. For this political cycle, yeah. It's all Iowa, Iowa, Iowa. Here's the deal. There are 40 delegates at stake in Iowa on January 15th, on that Monday. The thing that makes Iowa very unique is that when you vote in a primary, you go to your, you know, school or fire station, wherever you cast your ballot, and you walk out. In the Iowa caucuses, we're talking 2-3 hours that you publicly have to stand in a VFW, a fire station, a school, a government building, and go through an iterative process over the course of hours to announce your support for a particular candidate. So it is truly an organizational effort like no other. So just being able to say that you want Donald Trump and raise your hand in a poll or answer a poll or show up in this, it's going to be a very different thing. And I will tell you, having been in Iowa, the ground game of President Trump is leaps and bounds ahead of where it was in 2015. But Ron DeSantis should not be taken lightly in terms of the number of people that their super PAC has gotten assigned caucus commitment cards. Does that mean anything? No. But if he can get those people to show up, you're talking about a universe of about 200,000 people that will be voting in the Iowa caucuses. And I say that because these things have a history of people from behind going forward. And I think the Trump campaign, from my conversations with them, fully understands the importance of the ground game in Iowa, and they're ready for it. But they understand everything's at stake. If DeSantis can score a victory there, this race goes on. But if Trump pulls out a strong win in Iowa, he will then roll through New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, and it's over. But Iowa is the key to everything right now.
Sean, how does that look if DeSantis does pull it off? Because I've heard the exact same things you've heard, that DeSantis' ground game is second to none, that he's just, he might shock some people. If he does, Does the campaign limp on? Does that launch him up to be a neck and neck with Donald Trump? What do we think an Iowa win is a must for him, but what does it do? Does it keep him on life support, or does it put him in even, does he draw even with Trump in the primary?
So that's the million-dollar question. I'll flip it first. If he loses in Iowa by more than 10 points, he's over. Game out. He's out.
I think
Nikki Haley tries to grind. If he can score a victory, I think that changes the dynamic. The donors then line up behind him. You've heard the media narrative in the past week and a half, Nikki Haley, Nikki Haley, Nikki Haley. If DeSantis can pull out a win or a close second, and I mean a really close second in Iowa, I think the donors and the media then switch back over to DeSantis. And then I think the question is, will he be a one-trick wonder, or can he pull something out in New Hampshire or South Carolina? South Carolina is going to be a lot bigger of a challenge because Nikki Haley is the favorite daughter there. But I think what I will say is that it's going to change the dynamic, meaning that's when things are going to get mixed up real quick. Does Trump shuffle the deck and try to maybe get rid of some folks that he had? But you think about the last three winners, Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum. Those folks were not doing particularly well early on, but they also weren't facing a guy like Donald Trump, who had been a two-time nominee, who had such an insurmountable lead. So it's one thing to go from 4% to 20, which is what a lot of those guys did.
Yeah. John, my man, I appreciate it. It is the Sean Spicer Show every single weeknight, 7 p.m. now Eastern Time on the First TV. We're not done yet. We have more. Democrats, they have a poop problem. Well, you know what? Just hang on. You'll see what I'm talking about in just a moment. Before we get to that, let's do this. America has a problem. A testosterone problem. It's bad. How bad is it? America's testosterone levels have been cut in half in the last 50 years. Cut in half. That is, it's going to end the society. Look, you vote, don't vote. Unless we fix that problem, society ends. We won't be able to make enough new Americans, period. This is affecting men 15 to 95. Don't run down to the local clinic and get a shot in your arm. Handle it naturally. Chalk is natural herbal supplements. Get a male vitality stack, fellas. Female vitality stack, ladies. They have endless natural herbal supplements there, and it is the Christmas season. And Chalk honors Christmas with incredible sale prices. Everything's on sale right now, everything. Code JesseTV. Go to chalk.com and use the code JesseTV, all right? We'll be back. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. Even though this is probably going to be a little bit more serious than we usually do for lighten the mood, because here's the truth. America has a gut health problem. And I was not really aware of this until I started getting super into politics and started doing this kind of media for a living. I was not aware of how bad the digestive issues are in America, specifically with the Democrat Party. And gut health is really, really important. If you, I don't know, show up at a climate conference and you fart, that's not good.
I find myself getting more and more militant because I do not understand how adults who are in position of responsibility can be avoiding responsibility for taking away those things that are killing people on a daily basis. And the reality is that those things that are killing people on a daily basis. And the reality is that...
That wasn't a one-off either. Maybe you're thinking that was just John Kerry. Joe Biden, do you remember when Joe Biden met with the Pope? Joe Biden met with the Pope, and the media kind of buried this story. Joe Biden met with the Pope and then pooped his pants. He pooped his pants in front of the Pope. And look, it's not just a Joe Biden-John Kerry problem. Democrats have a gut health issue.
Uncontradicted that the president used taxpayer dollars to ask the Ukrainians to help him cheat an election.
Work on this subject, not part of this package, but part of preserving our democracy. With that, I'm pleased to yield to the distinguished chairwoman.
And as I'm walking to the press room, I think I got to pass a little gas here. So I'm walking by myself. Who's going to know? Only a little something extra came out.
You pooped in your pants.
I pooped my pants.
And we'll still believe that he cared enough about his wife to pay the... That was gas.
It's not hyperbole about being made in America. A lot of that has to do with this industry.
I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.